You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
You can work from the road while turning your vehicle into a powerful high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On a network that covers more roads than any other carrier, connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to see if you're eligible for a free trial today. Based on independent third-party data, always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Awards Watch says Liam Neeson is at his best. Don't miss In the Land of Saints and Sinners. Having left his dark past behind, retired hitman Finbar Murphy, played by Neeson, leads a quiet life in a remote coastal Irish town. But when a menacing crew of terrorists arrive, Finbar is drawn into a vicious game of cat and mouse, forcing him to choose between exposing his secret identity or defending his friends and neighbors. In the Land of Saints and Sinners, from Samuel Goldwyn Films and Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. Watch it now on digital. Rated R.
I'm Peanut Tillman, and this is the NFL Players Second Acts Podcast. I got my high school librarian, Roman Harper, right over here. What you grinning for?
Because every time you just get more and more creative with how you name drop me. So I appreciate it. As long as I stay in your life, I appreciate it. However I get there, I don't know. Anyways, all of our listeners out there, make sure you give us a 5-star rating. Hit the subscribe button. Come part of the family of the NFL Player Second Acts Podcast. And also, anywhere you pick up your podcasts, whether it's Apple or iHeart, tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend. Check us out.
Terrence and Tory Holt were just on the show. Amazing interview. Give it a listen.
Today's interview, I'm super, super excited to have a duo. I think it's our first duo we've had on the podcast.
It is.
Really looking forward to it. We got my man, my partner in crime, Charles Peanut Tillman, as always. And today's guest, let's go down the resume. All right. It's the Holt brothers. Both of these guys attended NC State.
Right.
I was a teammate with one of them, yep. The brother, yep. Terrence Holt,
yep.
Who I'm not going to read off his stats yet.
Sure.
I will go start with Tory Holt, the brother, the wide receiver, 4-time Hall of Fame finalist. Which means he's close. He's knocking on the door. Super Bowl champion, 7-time Pro Bowler, 2-time All-Pro, led the league in receptions twice in the NFL's 2000s All-Decade team. Congratulations, my boy. Yes, Terrence Holt, my favorite Holt, because my team for a year came in, taught me some ropes. You know what I mean? He's an older guy. I was always looking for that safety to look up to. Yeah. He was a great blend, a great person. I get to bounce a whole bunch of ideas off. Love playing beside him. Terrence Holt was a 5th-round pick in 2003, played 6 years, and is at the same time together as well at Doran Tony. So Tory's time. So welcome to the podcast, fellas.
Sir, thank you guys for having us. Thanks for having us.
The brothers, man. And like I said earlier, Tory, you should be used to this, all this coverage around, all these DBs around you in space. So feel comfortable sharing today.
No doubt, man. It's certainly a pleasure to be here for sure. When Megan and them reached out, I was like, "Yo, the podcast is happening at the draft. Would y'all, you know, would be willing to join?" I was like, "Can I bring my bro?" It's like, "Yeah." So good to have my brother here. It's good to be able to be
here. I think that's dope, though, man. Still looking out for your little brother. Like, "Yo, come on the show with me, man." That's what's up. I like that though.
We do a lot together, man.
That's what's up. I like that though.
And a lot of that it started from how we was raised.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, our mom and our dad was really big on us being together. We got an older sister. So, You know, even though as guys, as boys, we competed, tore it up in the crib.
Yeah.
But at the same day, at the same time, we had to come back. Yo, what's up, man?
It was
nice to compete. You know, we still brothers. We still show love.
So what's the age difference, real quick?
Okay.
So
4 years apart.
4 years apart. 4 years, okay.
Yeah. Okay. Now let's address the elephant in the room. All right. So at what point does the younger brother get bigger than the older brother? And like, how did these things start to happen? Because I got all older brothers.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
I cannot. I've never beat my older brother. It's like this block.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. I'm a little bit bigger than he is, and it just doesn't.
But you're the youngest, right?
I'm the youngest.
But you look the oldest.
Yeah.
I'm just throwing it out there. He the oldest. He the youngest, but right, he looked
the oldest. Glad we got that clarified. Yeah. Glad we got that clarified.
Well, yeah. Well, I was always chasing my brother. I always wanted to be around my brother.
Yeah.
And he in our neighborhood, he hung with the older kids as well. So the kids or guys that he was hanging with were always like 4 and 5 years older than him.
Yeah.
So I'm 4 years behind him. So I'm hanging around guys that are 8 years older than me.
Yeah.
And when it comes to guys at that age, guys oftentimes at that age want to hang around girls.
Yeah.
And so, but anyway, if my brother was in our neighborhood pitching horseshoes, playing football, I wanted to be there. So he was always had the burden of my presence and being around older guys and older girls. And I think that's for me playing with them, him playing with older kids in the neighborhood helped develop his game physically and kind of understanding that at some point you're going to be playing. This is your competition. So, they're older than you now, but if you go to college, you go to pros, this is what you're going to be going against. And then for me, that was just, it was just normal. So playing up, playing competition that were bigger, older, more mature than you, and just always wanting to be in his shadow. That's kind of continued kind of to this day, us being business partners and having the fortune of both playing in the National Football League, which is, you know, unique in itself to have brothers that have played, even though we got a lot of brothers in our league that have played. Statistically, there's not a lot of brothers that have played in our league or made it to the league. Mm-hmm. So anyway, it's just a natural thing. He's doing something. He's been very nice and has always thought about me and invited me to it, and that's just how we do. It's from my mom and our dad.
Yeah, so let me start this next question off. I'm gonna cross my legs. So
we got
that grown sexy going on right now. We got that grown sexy going on right now. So I think it's cool that you have your brother to look up to, and then I know probably when you got to the league you had an idea of what to expect.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
And maybe you didn't just because you're the oldest and you're kind of setting the tone.
Correct.
What was your welcome to the NFL moment? And then I want you to answer that question.
Sure.
And were you prepared for it? And did you get that advice from him?
I think for me it was when I was running, I think it was like 0-48 and the defense was in zone. And I chose to set down, which I did what I was supposed to do. It was my responsibility. And I'm thinking it's, you know how in practice, they ask y'all to tag off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nah. Charlie Clemens. Bam. Excuse me. Crush me.
Yeah.
I'm just like, yo, welcome to the NFL, young boy. Mm. So for me, physically, that was my welcome to the National Football League. Mentally, it was playing in the Super Bowl was my welcome to the National Football League.
And that was your rookie year, right?
That was my rookie year. So that took me to a whole nother level right from the gate. So my expectations were high right from the door. So those are my two welcome to the National Football League moments that stuck with me.
Right.
And for me, I had the fortune of, I think I earned the title for the pros. And again, it's, I was very happy with being considered a pros pro. And that happened for me very early on because, again, I was used to being in the locker room. I carried myself in a certain kind of way where I was a gym rat. I stayed right across the street from in Allen Park in Dearborn. I was drafted by the Lions. And I didn't have a family. So for me, I was always around and played with players like Robert Porche. And I remember, being around them and said, man, you walk around here like you a vet. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, ain't nobody pointing you or having to tell you where to go. Well, I'm spending so much time in the building. I'm telling people that been here 2-3 years that this is upstairs or all those kinds of things. But my moment to welcome to the NFL was once you have rookie kind of mini camps. It's just the rookies that are there. Mm-hmm. And everybody's talking about, well,
it's going to be different when the vets come in.
I heard you had your OTAs.
And so, you know, that's
make a little nervous.
I was going to say it's some anxiety to come dang, you know, this is the league and we, you know, we running on. I mean, you ran on and off the field when you was in college, but it's just tempo. Everything's tempo, period to period, and everybody's trying to get you used to the NFL life. And they were saying OTAs, here come the vets. And again, we in shells and in team drill. I'm out there. We're going against the first team offense. And Corey Schlesinger, which was a fullback.
Fullback for us, from Nebraska,
is coming through the hole and coming down the sideline. And he likes to finish a drill. So he finishes the drill. We got the ball maybe 40 yards out. He's going to finish all the way to the end zone. And so we being taught tag off like you just was talking about. Yeah. So I'm tagging off. And I had not got the memo with Corey Schlesinger. He's stiff arm. So all I got is a hat on running around these.
Detroit.
Yeah. Yep. Running down the field. And Corey Schlesinger, I go to tag in kind of like, you know, form tackle. I'm going to breeze by him. And he stiffs on my whole helmet. About come off, pop off my head. That's how stiff his stiff arm was. And it was kind of without him even saying, welcome to the NFL, everybody else is saying, like, welcome to the NFL.
That's right.
So it was those moments. So in my 13 years, you know, I got my bumps and bruises, and I'm going to look into my camera right here, and I'm going to show my little pinky that's all jacked up right now. Yeah. So I'm listening to you talk. Beautiful. And I'm looking at your finger in your left hand, and can you look in that camera. Show them that thing right there. Oof, that's what greatness looks like.
That's hands, yo.
That's no chest. That's the ball never touched his chest.
Never.
That's all hands.
Only time in traffic, because you know sometimes you gotta go up and body the ball. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the collision allows you to catch the ball.
Yeah.
So, but other than that, I'm using all my hands to catch the football. Like that's. As receivers, that's our job, is to catch the football. So I was I've always been very, very comfortable around a ball. Mm-hmm. I was talking about this last night. I think me and London Fletcher was talking, and I used to sleep with the ball. I used to be just laying in the bed, flipping the ball. I mean, he knows.
That's,
throwing multiple tennis balls off of the wall and catching it out in the neighborhood. Like, I've just always been very comfortable catching the ball. So I'm a natural master of catching the football
and
with my hands.
And funny thing about his finger, we're in Arizona in 2007. By that time, I had moved on to Arizona, and we're playing the Rams. And we're out there, as we always did when we played, we're talking mid-play, we're talking to each other. Hey, you know, family get settled, tickets, you know, everything. This game going on, right? He just ran a go route, whatnot. I'm coming back from covering somebody, and we just talking to each other. And he's like, man, he was blocking somebody, and he was talking about his fingers. Man, I just broke my finger again. He showed me the finger and popped it back in, but this finger has gotten uglier.
Yeah, it's
over the years.
I'm like, man, they can fix that, you know. And he's just big on this. This is his.
Y'all know I'm the surgeries. I'm tired of the surgeries.
Same with this joint. Yeah, it is what it is.
Right. We all have wounds. We all have our war wounds.
But I told him, you're scaring people.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
He's not lying. I just saw this finger for the first time. When you first talked, I wasn't going to talk about it.
You didn't want to jump out your skin?
Yeah, I did. Right. You seemed very comfortable with it.
I'm very comfortable with it.
I'm trying to be a professional.
Very comfortable.
He over here queasing for the pass out.
I told him, it's one thing to be a badge of honor, but if you can't hold no change in your hand, it ought to be like a no change, you can't hold limit to the badge of honor where you got to get it fixed. But
so tell me this, how does it feel when people ask you guys that you achieved the rare feat?
Sure.
And that is both brothers making it to the NFL. How much pride does that bring you? I got three older brothers, so I would have loved to have an older brother play in the NFL and achieve that goal. But for your family, how much pride and for you guys individually?
No, I'll go first. I mean, you mentioned pride. I mean, we hold this. I mean, it allows us to have the type of pride that that you look for in a family, and then particularly being able to share something with your brother. So we don't take it for granted, for sure. And we know we have a responsibility as being brothers and having the success that we had coming from a small town, Gibsonville, North Carolina. You know, there's a lot of little ones, a lot of folks in the neighborhood that look to us. So we're very aware of that. But to be able to share something like this stage with your brother, the highs, the lows, the indifference, all those things is just really, to me, is the ultimate. Because we also come across siblings that don't get along.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
And we look at like so, that's what we like.
How you not talk to your brother in a 6 months, right, 3 months?
Like what do you mean?
What is that?
Yeah. So to be able to have a biological sibling and you have that type of connection with, it's really dope. And it's the same with our sister. Mm. Our sister's a school teacher. We all pride ourselves on serving. And we got that from my father. Mm. So my sister is a teacher. Terrence and I obviously played sports, and we have our foundation now where we're able to serve. But to be able to do all of those things, I know I'm going a little long, but to be able to do all those things with the one that you love and your brother, it's dope. It's really cool.
Yeah, and I'd say for me, it goes back to my first statement. I always wanted to do what my brother wanted to do.
Yeah.
So it was both to have that example, kind of to follow, and a good example at that, because you know not every older brother or older sister is a good example, but they want you to be the best you can be in most occasions. And for me, it was both me trying to do what he done and follow kind of in his footsteps, which to some people they'll talk about the pressure that comes with that.
Yeah,
they're always coming behind your brother and him having the type of career. But for me, it was competitive, because like we talk about this a great deal, where having an example in seeing that somebody can do it is sometimes all you need.
I
had
that.
The ultimate right. example percent, of my yeah. brother, and I'm right. kind of like my brother. Oh, he had 32 points. I know I'm going for 40.
Yeah,
so it was kind of that competition that was breeded with us being young, and he made the thought of going to college, earning a scholarship, while seemingly daunting. My brother did it. I know I can do it. That's proof of concept that I can do it. Right. Plus, I'm competitive. I want to do what he's done, if not better and more. And so, I just had that mindset and thought process that I'm gonna make the league. I'm gonna do what I need to do to make the league. Get me a scholarship. I'm gonna play. I'm gonna play well. Whatever role I need to play, I'm gonna play it and do it. And I had his tutelage all the way, you know, through. That's, you know, I think the beauty of he and I is that we've been best friends throughout the process. Right. We've competed and been best friends. And when he lost Super Bowl in 2001, I lost the Super Bowl.
Yeah,
he wanted to go out. This is a funny story. We were after they lose to the Patriots there in New Orleans. He comes to the room. We all walk back to the room. He finally get back after all the media and all that kind of stuff, and comes to the room. Hey, he's dressed, ready to go out. Man, I ain't going out, man. Like I'm crying. I'm down. This is how invested that I've always been in him and in his routes and stuff that he's done. You know, playing against the Rams was the easiest thing in the world for me. The greatest show on turf. While they were great, I knew them. I had been watching them as a fan, but also watching them with a competitive mind. If I was ever on the field against them, this is what I would do. And so all that to say, man, that we understand that we've done something that is unique. We are prideful about it, but we also try to impress upon other people that you can do it.
Yeah.
And we were population 1,500. Nobody had made it out of our neighborhood. Yeah. But we had, like most neighborhoods and guys that have made it, we had all talented people.
Yeah. Right.
Yes. Like maybe even more talented than us that ran in the, you know, just
whatever
stuff.
Situation.
Bad decisions.
I love that, because that is my story.
Yeah.
Growing up in Prattville, Alabama, nobody that looked like me had ever made it to the NFL. Yeah. Mm. We had a fullback named Kevin Turner. God rest his soul.
Sure.
He passed away from ALS a few years ago. But that was the only guy.
Wow.
And so because that, and like you said, once somebody that you know does it, you're like, dude, I can do it too.
Man.
Like,
man.
I didn't know I could achieve that. Yep. I thought it was.
And they town is small. Was, they ain't got but like 200 people in population. Right. Boy, they tiny.
I thought our ceiling was on top of us, and it's not even there.
Yeah.
And so it's beautiful to hear you talk about that. And really, Tori, you just bursting through.
Yep.
And really, man, we all can do it now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean, you open up a floodgate. You know
yeah,
I mean?
So with competition, I know I'm the baby.
Sure.
And my brother would pick on me, and like you, I wanted to hang out with my brother, and he didn't want to hang out with me just because he was older. There's a 3-year gap difference, age difference.
Yeah.
And I just was like, man, every time I tried to beat my brother at something, basketball, running, whatever, he used to kick my butt.
Yep.
Not until I got into high school. I was probably my sophomore year.
Yeah.
We finally played basketball 1-on-1. And this was like, I'm drawing my foot, putting my foot down. You are not finna beat me.
Yeah.
And it's funny y'all say that though, but that was the first time I had ever beat my brother. I was 15 and I beat him in we went to 10. Yep. I finally beat him. And it was at that moment in time I was like, you will never beat me again.
Yeah. Right. Same story.
That moment on, I never lost to my brother because it was just like, I got you. Because I could believe, it's like, I beat him now. Yeah. Oh, it's real. So I know y'all got some competitive stories.
Yep.
Oh yeah,
like going at it. Like, yeah, give me a good story.
So one of the stories, same very similar story. We had we went to Eastern Guilford High School.
Yeah.
I had grown 6 inches in my freshman summer.
Okay.
And he was back from college and came to one of our practices. And after the practice, he and I playing 1-on-1. And again, by that time I had developed, I was taller than him. I got him and I beat him that particular day. But with football, it's always been a challenge. I don't know that I can say other than the score. We beat, when I was with the Cardinals, we beat him a couple times. We beat y'all in 2003 when I was with the Lions.
Yep.
Where y'all were 13-2.
Yeah,
y'all came in.
I was pissed that game.
We beat y'all, but y'all, I was mad at y'all because y'all were headed to the playoffs. We were headed home.
Yeah.
With the way y'all approached the game. But I say, we got stories from at our grandma's house where Black grandma's houses are oftentimes more like museums.
1,000%.
Right.
You can't touch them. You can't go do nothing.
Plastic everywhere.
Yeah. Everything is just an antique.
Right.
The tall plants
growing everywhere and everywhere.
Y'all already know.
We had the African art that ain't from Africa.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Just labeled. When did you go? Grandma, you went to Africa? When did you go?
None of this stuff is from Africa.
Right. You flip it over, made in China, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a grandma house, man.
So we in my grandma's house, and he and I, like most occasions, got some ball, made up game. We playing, we getting rough, and we hit one of the antiques or hit one of the tables, and the corner of his head hit the table, and he's bleeding.
Yeah,
but we can't tell
you
nobody.
Can't tell.
Because you ain't supposed to be doing nothing.
No, you ain't supposed to be playing.
Not in grandma's house. So we competing so much and so heavy. We can't tell nobody this story. He got a cut in his head that we got to hide, that we can't tell nobody. It was luckily enough, he didn't need any stitches or anything, but we got more examples of stuff like that where we competed, I'm telling you, in everything. Yeah. It didn't matter. It's cards, we didn't even have to have, and that's why we get on our kids now oftentimes where kids need to be set up with everything. You got to have a baseball glove to play baseball or a bat to play baseball. We went and got sticks. We didn't have
more
rims.
Resourceful back then.
Yeah.
It drives me crazy.
Broomstick, that was our bat.
My driveway is on a slant. And my wife's like, we shouldn't even have a basketball goal because like it's on a slant.
Sure.
I'm like, what does that even matter? Like, I played on grass.
Yeah,
like,
just...
You make it work.
Yeah,
you make it work.
It doesn't matter.
Yep. Yeah.
And so often I call it, so many of our kids, and we're blessed, we're fortunate, I get it.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of first world problems on this conversation right now. But they live on a yacht.
Yeah.
And so they don't know. It's really hard to tell somebody that lives on a yacht that, you know, your life is not that is bad.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
When, you know, that's all they know.
That's their life. That's their life.
Yeah. Exactly.
And to this day, we still are very competitive, but we're respectful and we certainly have reached an age which competing against one another is kind of less. We're kind of competing and have challenges that are oftentimes versus, in business together that are versus other obstacles.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're more or less coming together to strategize on how collectively we're gonna overcome something that, you know, whatever challenge it is that we're facing that particular day. So
I like that. All right, we're going to put a pin in that because I want to get into the business ventures in a second. But before we get that, I want to talk about the greatest show on turf. And so what was that like when you first show up and it becomes, because I don't think you guys were called the greatest show on turf until all you guys showed up your rookie year. And, you know, you guys are doing the dance.
Bob and weave.
The bob and weave. And then you were also, I give you guys another thing. You got that receiving corps was the first receiving corps I ever remember that. It, nobody cared about yak. Like, you guys just caught the ball and got down.
We called it bomb shelter. We hated it. We hated it. Nobody, it was bomb shelter. I couldn't stand y'all.
That's very unique.
That kind of started happening a little later on in our career because, you know, we dealt with so many coverages, man. I took some shots in the National Football League. Unfortunately, I didn't take a ton of concussions, but I took some legitimate shots across the league. So at times, I thought, you hear Prime, others talk about made it a business decision. At times, I made those business decisions whether I was going to try to overexert myself and extend and get banged, or go ahead and be smart, take what I got, live to play another down.
I thought it was genius.
And then eventually
you guys bomb, first ones to really like
right, and then eventually bomb on you. And the next thing you know, I'm in your end zone.
Yeah.
So, but in terms of my introduction into the team with the greatest show on turf, I mean, I had Isaac Bruce, Ricky Prohl, Oz Akeem, guys, when I came into the room that were true pros, true vets. And was really good wide receivers in all facets of the position. So I had a luxury of seeing that every day. So as long as I stayed the course, I could become that complete receiver because I was seeing it in my room every day. Now a lot of these young guys that are coming into their rooms, they're all young, so they're all teaching each other and they're learning as they go, whether having sometimes having a legit vet in the room that can kind of set the tempo of the room, set the tempo in practice, you know, accountability, just showing you the way every single day. I was fortunate enough to have that in our room and on the team. Guys like Brother Ray Agnew, who's now with the Detroit Lions, Kurt Warner, obviously I know Kurt Marshall, Orlando Pace, who was dominant. I had the luxury of watching Orlando dominate guys because I played the X. So I'm right on the ball with I could see the left tackle working. He used
destroying,
dominate cat.
He's a big human being.
He is a man. He's
like a bear, but a like a gentle giant. Though. He is so like, hey, what's up, you know?
Yeah.
It's like he's so soft.
So seeing
him at the Super Bowl for the first time, and I was like, man, this dude is
huge, man. And he was a tremendous athlete. You know, he played basketball. So I had a luxury of, you know, watching. So seeing that on a day to day basis, man. And if you love ball and you're competitive and you want to be, you know, established at your position, established in the game. It's like, man, I got to do what they do and more. So having that and then seeing how we formed and how we gelled, I think how we became the greatest show on turf was our practices. Like our practices are greater than, like we had some awesome games, but our practices were even greater. To me, that's where the greatest show to me was born, was how we practiced, how unselfish we were. We celebrated each other.
Yeah.
Which was our coaches used to just tell us how rare that was. Like, we can't believe like no one's tripping over who's getting off. They're like when one get off, everybody got off.
Yeah. Right.
And then another thing too, what extended beyond the playing field for us too, like with that championship group and that greatest show and turf group, all of us both offensively and defensively, we had a bond. Like we hung with each other. Like we spent time with one another outside of ball.
Yeah.
You know where I feel. You know how I feel about the game. So. That's what I was introduced to as a rookie. So you got to only imagine what my expectations were going to be each year.
Right.
That we had success or whether we didn't. We had a good foundation of players that showed us how to do it. And we had a really good foundation of coaches. Coach Dick Vermeil, who just went into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, was the head coach. And Mike Morris and those guys. Coach Morris was phenomenal. Was the offensive coordinator and guys on defense. But we had a good collective of players where football meant something to him.
Right.
So for a rookie, it was good to get that kind of tutelage early.
I think everybody I've spoken to who has been to a Super Bowl or have won a Super Bowl, they always talk about how dope or how amazing that locker room is and how they hang out outside of the locker room. It's a must. I feel like you don't do that, you're not going to a Super Bowl.
It's gonna be tough. It's
gonna be extremely tough. Yeah. And then can we just talk about You talked about he's got inducted Dick Vermeil. He got inducted to the Hall of Fame. Like, can we just talk about the Hall of Famers on that team real quick? So you got Dick Vermeil, you got Isaac, you got Kurt, you got
Orlando,
Marshall.
And Aeneas Williams. Aeneas was with us on the championship team in 2001.
What is that, five?
Yeah.
So what are you, four-time finalists? Like, yeah. I know you're knocking, you're beating. We just had Leroy Butler on the show, mm-hmm, and he was really talking about, and he really gave a beautiful depiction of what it meant for him to finally get that knock. And I'm hoping, I'm praying. I see your name every year for the last couple of years, yeah, man. You were, damn, you so close. And yeah, looking at yeah, your, like, when you just read off the stats earlier, I'm just like, man, this, why? What are we doing?
Yeah.
Who's ever watching, like, hey,
let's do it. Let's get it.
Let's
in.
Do the damn yeah, thing.
Stop playing.
It's about
that.
No,
I appreciate
time.
That. Yeah, no, I appreciate
it's
that.
It's about that time.
It's been a cool journey, man. I've been, you know, you mentioned I've been a finalist 4 years, and just every year the process of just learning something different and
right,
seeing how it all works. Certainly excited for the guys that go in, but it's definitely, always a level of disappointment definitely, when you
yeah,
don't.
Yeah,
you
for know, sure.
But I will say this, coming out of this year, we feel like our team, my presenter who was Howard Balls and my team, we feel like we are a step closer. So mm-hmm, to your point, we feel like it's going to happen soon, but it'll be an incredible moment to be a, you know, to be able to,
did you think it would be like this though? Like, did you think like, yeah, maybe my work will just speak for itself?
I did, or, absolutely, certainly.
Or there's a lot of politicking, campaigning,
and I still lean on that presenter
as well. Like, I didn't even know you got to have a presenter.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's
yeah,
like, it's
so
a
each,
whole
so each, yes, each guy that goes in has a presenter, and a lot of times it's someone that covered them at that particular city or that particular team.
The beat writer, yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, so they have to go in and present your case of why you should be a Pro Football Hall of Fame. And to Peanut's point, you know, my thing has always been, it's my work is done. It's
yeah,
if it's Hall worthy, yeah, great. If it's not, okay, I get it. I think for me, the biggest joy that I get out of continuing to stay around the game, and as I continue to talk to guys that I played against, mm-hmm, the respect that we show for each other.
Mm.
Yeah, for playing the game.
Yeah,
to me, y'all know that means everything.
It does.
When yeah, your dude it's come up to you or whatever, yeah, tell you like, peers, yo, y'all know that shake and yeah, that hug, yeah, like
you're a bad boy.
That's
yeah.
And the hall is great, but that y'all know means a whole hell of a lot. So good. just feeling that, being on that wavelength is great. I can only imagine with that and the hall and wearing the jacket. I mean, it's icing on the cake in regards to how we feel and play this game and now, how we view it.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by 3-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think. Love he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to exactly, guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, exactly, he's going to guard. And then on
I'm
top
not
of that.
Guard like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college? Because it ain't Nick.
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can work from the road while turning your vehicle into a powerful high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi on a network that covers more roads than any other carrier. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls. Finish up that presentation or answer last-minute emails. Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to see if you're eligible for a free trial today. Based on independent third-party data, always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
At what point did you know when it was time to hang it up?
Sure.
And I want you to talk about the transition of not playing football. This is what you've been doing your whole life. You've been chasing your brother.
Yep.
You've had all these dreams. You've accomplished so many things.
Yep.
Can you talk about that transition? Because that's what this podcast is really
all
about. It's talking about the second acts and we all figuring out what to do next.
Sure. And kudos to both you all for doing this podcast.
Yes, sir.
Because, I mean, it's the thing that every player will go through. And to hear players that played 13 years, 18 years, 15 years, whatever have you, and to know that they may have the same struggles. They've set themselves up financially. They've played as long as they can play, but they still struggle for a guy that maybe played 2 years or 6 years or 4 years where their careers may have been prompted to stop, you know, because they just couldn't make another team. But for me, I had the fortune again of having my brother play and come before me and having advisors that had advised him where a lot of my transition started before I even took a snap in an NFL. It was thinking about next act and setting myself up on insurance and all those kinds of things that at some point in your career you have to start talking about. I was, after my rookie year finished, I was part of that inaugural class that started to do some of the executive entrepreneurship kind of programs where I went to Wharton. Yeah. And so there was guys that were 10 years, 11 years, 12 years in. Here I am as a rookie, only rookie, youngest person, 24 years old, and there's 35, 36, 37-year-old guys in there at this Wharton event in school to learn about kind of transition. It was transitioning with success. And so I've always kind of been ahead of the curve trying to think about my next act, not hoping that it would come anytime soon, but I got to prepare for it and start thinking about it. But just like anybody else, after my when it was all said and done and free agency was going in a way that I thought would not having a lot of bites from teams and having my faculties, I had had several concussions when I played. I had some injuries like knee and back and some of those things. One day I just kind of looked around. It was like in February leading into March. And like I said, I hadn't had a lot of teams that had showed interest in communicating with my agent. I was like, you know what, man, I have done well. I've played 6 years. I had a goal of playing 10 years. Mm-hmm. I just think it's time. I just got married. And finish in New Orleans and going to that 2009 season, I start going to business conferences and just wanting to just learn like what's out there, like, you know, what opportunities kind of suit and fit our needs. And we had already started in 07 a real estate business. We were going to do house flips. And it was called Brothers Buildings was the name of the company, the LLC. The LLC that we had started.
Yeah.
And so we just started to learn. We had great business advisors and people that we have been fortunate to be surrounded by to kind of talk to us and that we could trust that wasn't in it to have us invest in something that they wanted to do. And that's oftentimes what players can be surrounded around is people that they trust that are in it for themselves to say, you know what, let's take, I can make your money work for you. You know what I'm saying? Just invest in me and invest in it. And for us, it was investing in ourselves.
Right.
And knowing that we had the drive and the ambition to do something to go beyond what we had done with our sports careers. And so fast forward to that, you know, for me, I just, and with my wife's support, because I went through a period where I was down. I didn't have a locker room to support me and pick me up. So I told my brother this. I didn't know that it was depression, but I probably was going through depression for about a couple
months.
For
sure, 1,000%. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And so I had to find that next thing. And I think what has helped me, and me and Tori talk about this all the time, is if you're trying to get in one big bite all of the joy that you get and accomplishment you get from playing in the National Football League and running out there on the field for 85,000 people either booing you or cheering for you, you're probably going to be disappointed. What you have to do in transitioning and in your second act is those small bites and those small wins and kind of collectively putting together, whether it's business that you're doing, whether it's being able to be the dad that you know wanted to be or you couldn't be when you had football kind of taking up so much of your time, volunteering.
Yeah.
It's things of which, you know, ingratiating yourself into your community, things like that, that I think those collectively can put together a nice little mix of stuff that can give you the pleasure of playing it and not replace it. It's something that, you know, that most people don't do, but it can give you the pleasure of filling your day with small wins and things that you can find a career and find a second act out of. And for me and for us, that we did, we went around business conferences, got business advisement, and then landed, rather than the real estate company, on construction. Mm-hmm. And there was opportunities for both public and private projects that could benefit from diversity and inclusion and from a minority-owned company like Hope Brothers Construction. And so we went about that course of pursuing public and private opportunities. And 11 years later, man, we've kind of grown our kind of revenue, pushing kind of like 9 figures now, and some big opportunities in front of us. And it's just been just like our careers, where we've grown each year, we've evolved, we've learned, we've gotten better, we got craftier, got smarter. We've had some things that we've not done well, but we've learned from those, and we feel like we've surrounded ourselves with a really, really, really good team. They are really what make Tori and I successful, and we have the benefit of all the lessons that we've learned and people that we've talked to, coaches, being coached. Mm-hmm. We have that, and we are in the position now to coach, to coach and own. And step in the fray when we need to provide a plan of action and a course of action, and letting people grow and work and all those kinds of things. So that's really what's been beneficial for us and been helpful for us.
And I appreciate that. Kind of give us that whole what you guys are up to a little bit more.
Sure.
And what I was thinking of before, I kind of lost my thought.
Sure, sure.
What you said was so true, is that the respect mutually from your peers and being called a true pro. Like the ultimate compliment for football players a lot of times in locker rooms. Like, well, I just want to be called the pro.
Pro's pro. Right.
Well, it's funny because when he and I had this conversation with my kids, when Terrence was in high school, I talked to him as a high schooler. When he was in college, I talked and treated him as he was a high schooler. When he was college.
Mm-hmm.
When he came to the pros, that's over. You a pro now.
Yeah.
Like, it's a whole,
level up.
Expectations. And you got to do it every day. You're a pro. That's the expectation is for you to show up every single day. And I tell my, and now I'm having that conversation with my daughters. I'm not talking to you like I talked to you when you was in high school.
Yeah.
I'm talking to you now, you're in college. Dad hasn't been through that. Mom's been through that. And we speaking that way.
Right.
And as you move up. So I just wanted to share that.
And I appreciate that. And then, you know, let's talk about your transition a little bit. I mean, what made you decide to retire when you did? I mean, you were still productive your last year. I think you had
51 catches
for over 700 yards. And you're like, you know what? I'm good. I'm ready to go.
Yeah, my body, my knees told me, yo, you, it's time for you to be done.
I can do it. Yeah. A lot of turf days. You know, played on a lot of turf too.
Yeah, you know, a lot of, you know, I've had surgeries, had issues. I came in to the pros with the knee issue. Mm-hmm. Oh. That I suffered down at the senior bowl. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I knew early on that I would have knee issues. And because of the way, also how I practice and how I played and how we cut and move as a receiver, you got to, mm-hmm. you do a lot of bend and a lot of cutting. Sure. So I knew I had a certain window. So with that, with me knowing that, anticipating that, that drove me to really, in that window that I had, was to go as hard as I possibly could.
Right.
Be as consistent, be as dominant as I possibly could. So it was my knees that, my health is what took me out, which was fine. You know, I anticipated it happening. I knew it was coming. When it does, it's not what we want, but yeah. It's reality.
It is reality, yeah. Follow Tom.
Yeah, so I spoke to Coach Belichick about it, and you know, and we came up with a plan, and remember calling home, calling my wife, calling my grandmother, calling Terrence, calling my pops. Hey, this
it was
is
a day. It was, it
hey,
was
you know, this it was is emotional. This is, yeah, this yeah, is, I was, yeah, this is it. This is it.
I was coming from a business conference, and he called, and it was kind of a pregnant pause there where it was like, he said, "Man, I'm done," and I knew he was I knew he was serious.
He's hurting his voice.
Oh man, it was, and when he said he was done, it was we done.
Yeah, family's done.
Right, because I had transitioned before him, and what I was gonna say, the funny thing about transition, I'm chasing my brother. Right, I'm always coming after my brother. Middle school, high school, college, pros. This is the first time that I was able to go before him. Yeah. So I was able to talk to him about transition and what it was gonna be like, and I never forget telling him the thing that he'll have to do, that we'll have to do, that I had to do, is humble ourselves.
Yeah.
Because we're, you know, being down back around the draft and going to the Super Bowl and all those kinds of things, oftentimes we are, not because we ask for it, but we're put on a pedestal.
For sure.
And we, you know, we're at these nice hotels and there's fans and there's people doing a whole lot of stuff for you. When you transition and you go back into the home, and not that you're out of the home, but there's nobody cheering your name,
right?
You know, and you got to be okay with that.
Get a little quieter, right?
Yeah, and when you step into business, people may allow and set up a meeting with you because, again, that they know you and kind of appreciated the career that you had. But when they're talking about giving you a business opportunity, that ain't got nothing to do because you caught, you know, 7-4, 140.
Right.
Yeah. If it's, there's money that you're spending, they want a return on their investment. Right. They want a service that is in keeping with that cost. So I was telling my brother at these business conferences, it's people that, you know, will chew you up. What's your elevator speech? What do you do?
And to that point, we went to an event and I wasn't ready.
Yeah, you weren't ready.
And I got humbled.
Yeah. Real quick.
Real quick.
So I went out and told him, I was like, man, I ain't never felt like that.
He was discouraged. Cause the guy was kind of, go ahead.
It wouldn't have been no different if he'd have came on my turf at the Pro Bowl and he, you know.
Yeah.
And then I'm on his turf as a businessman. I wasn't ready. You know, in my mind, I'm thinking I am. Okay, here I am. You know, I can. Nah, man.
How long did this?
I didn't even know how to. I had to learn how to talk the language.
Yeah.
Of business culture.
How long did it take you? How long did it take you to figure that out during that transition phase? Like, say, okay, I retire January 1, and then you're talking to your brother. He's giving you some advice.
Yeah.
Did you sit out a year? Did you wait a year? Or do you get right into it?
No, I was done. I was probably a couple years out.
Yeah.
Before we actually really went into it.
Yeah. So I was done in my, after going into the 2009 season. We started the business in October 17th, 2011 is when we got going. Yes. But we were going around taking coffees, lunch, dinners with people to teach us, to tell us before we expend money.
Yeah.
Tell us, we'll pay for coffee, lunch, and dinner to get lessons. How do we come into this construction industry? What's the best way? How have minority companies, small companies, have they failed? You know what I mean? How have they been able to carve out an identity for themselves to be known for something? Like, we're going around asking architects, engineers, potential clients, and other general contractors, construction managers, just like us. And what end up happening, which is the greatest thing, is just like with a coach, where a coach see that a player has invested and they'll come to them for extra work or extra tips. That's what we were getting from those people we were seeking counsel from. Right. Mm-hmm. As they seen we were into it, and right. this was not a place where we was just throwing money, or we were gonna own the company and never be seen and throw money at it and stuff like that. They seen our personal investment and interest in coming back. And if a guy told us, or girl told us, young lady told us to be, hey, come to this conference, and it's in San Diego, but come to this conference. What was happening was they was testing us.
Yep.
We show up, we on time, we suited and booted.
Yeah.
You know, we seeking knowledge. We there. First thing is we show up. And y'all know, like I know in our sport, and for our meetings, coming to a meeting and just showing up at meeting at 8 o'clock. That ain't it. You know what I mean? 8 o'clock, you late. If the meeting started at 8 and you there at 8, you late. Right. So we showing up 15 minutes early, attentive, ready to go. People started to invest in us. They started to champion us. And that's really the thing that helped he and I grow to lead our team, is we needed some executive coaching too.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Right. We needed to be poured in as well.
And I would say for our current and former players and legends and alumni that's listening to this podcast, I think you have to allow yourself to be humbled and allow yourself to be able to work through transitional coaching for a professional career outside of pro ball.
Yeah.
Like to give yourself the grace to learn. Because again, like I said, I wasn't ready for some of those business conversations that those folks had. I went back to town. I was like, some of that shit. So, but it made me like, okay, all right. In my plan days, I ain't letting that mistake happen again.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that'd be the last time coach gonna say something to me about that.
Yeah.
So you just learn to clean it up, you learn to get better, but you gotta give yourself the grace to do that.
And you gotta know what you do. That was the biggest thing.
Yeah.
Is people asking, what do you do?
Meaning know what your business does.
Yeah. And you gotta do it in a concise way. Because you might have the benefit, especially at these big conferences where people are meeting a lot of people, you may have the ear of an executive or a CEO for 60 seconds. You're coming down. That's why it's called an elevator speech.
Because everybody want to chat. Everybody want to get with them.
And the thing I'll say to players in their second act, if it's business, if it's philanthropic work, whatever, is what we learned very quickly was, while humbling ourselves is something that we needed to do, we didn't need to fray from who we are.
Right.
And what happens is in business, right, if everybody goes to Wharton, everybody goes to Howard or whatnot, and they are being trained to be these business folks. They're a dime a dozen. Like, they've gone the path towards being the business people we are. What we had was that we were unique. And what you'll learn in doing business and trying to do business is that 90% of the discussion that you may have with somebody has nothing to do with that business.
Right.
You're talking, sports, topic of the day, and being unique and having something to talk about other than the widget or the thing or business culture and discussion made us stand out.
Mm.
And so that's what I'd say to players, is don't worry about changing who you are. Be who you are, because that uniqueness is going to be different and going to make you stand out amongst everybody else. But be ready. Once in that 10% of that discussion, you got to know your business.
That's right.
And come with what you want. What do you want? What are you trying to get out of this meeting?
Right.
We shouldn't just be meeting just a meeting. You're dealing with somebody's time. It might be an hour, 30 minutes, 20 minutes. What do you want? And don't be afraid to tell people what you want. How can you help me?
Yep.
More people will help you if you open your mouth rather than you just, again, not open your mouth and don't utilize that meeting or that time that people have.
All I can say is,
yeah.
Wow, that's dope.
I like
that you just said, it seems like, and you're not the first person to do this. I'm the same way. I think you are too. When we retire and we get out and we get into that transition, and then we get humbled, we somehow get back into how we prepared, how we got to the league.
Yeah.
I'm sure you do it when you do your notes and stuff, right? Yeah. When you on TV and it's just like, no, hold on, I got to take these notes real quick. Like we get into that. All right, I know I'm not in the league no more, but I got to get back into that. I'm in the league mentality, mentally, of how we prepare. Yep. Like I think we all just naturally do that.
Like once we came to the Professional Football League, once we became professionals, we pros for the rest of our life, yo.
For sure.
It's a great point.
And whatever we do.
Yeah.
It's a great point because we only know one way.
I'm a pro.
That's it.
It's like fight or flight and there ain't no flight.
Yeah,
there
ain't no flight.
ain't no flight.
I'm a pro, yo. You're dealing with a pro.
Yeah.
And that's why I'd encourage guys that your second act can be better than your first act.
Yeah.
Right?
Most definitely.
Because now we, hopefully you've done right by your money. You are able to invest in yourself and able to multiply what you have. And like I said, humbling yourself, asking people for what you want, and preparing like you knew you had to prepare if you were a safety or a corner. And you had to go against the best receiver or the tight end or the running back or whatnot. You wasn't just showing up. And it's the same thing with business is do your homework, especially on who you're meeting. If somebody sends you a meeting invite, what's the agenda? What are we going to talk about?
Ask about it.
Right? Mm-hmm. I'm not going in a meeting that I'm not having no kind of understanding of what we're meeting about.
Exactly.
I think that's very important to try and encourage a lot of guys that are going through that transition to, you know, a lot of us are fearful of the unknown.
Sure.
And so a lot of times, you know, you've given some great nuggets talking about, you know, be who you are, right? And I've got some advice that, hey, look, man, some of you guys are stars. Naturally, people will be attracted to you because you're a natural star.
Correct.
And when you dim your light, other people can't shine.
Yep. Yeah.
So when you shine and continue to be who you are, it lets everybody in the room shine and be seen.
That's so
continue to lean into who you are. I think you guys have really hit that on the head. And for me, I would like to know about, you know, the Holt Brothers, Inc.
Sure.
And when you started this thing, did you guys have any, like, initial goals? And have you achieved those goals? And what is your trajectory or the future plans for it?
Mm-hmm. Sure. We certainly had goals. You know, we knew they would change kind of over time.
Of course.
But we had read all the business metrics of, you know, if you can make it 3 years and you can make it, you know, we've heard all those things. We've evolved, we've changed, we've got more focus. Holt Brothers Inc. When we started was kind of the parent company for LLCs like Holt Brothers Football, Holt Brothers Development, and Holt Brothers Construction LLC. And then we've had before Holt Brothers Inc. was born, we had Holt Brothers Foundation Inc.,
right,
which is just an affiliate. 2 hours.
That's a lot of ink. Websites you had to
But we've narrowed our focus where our primary businesses are. We're not doing anything with the development company, like going after any real estate deals. And we used to do camps and clinics with the football company, and COVID happened, and so we kind of not doing much with the football company. And so it's construction and it's foundation. Mm. And so sometimes narrowing your focus is part of that game plan too.
Yeah.
And you learn that over time. Like I only got so much bandwidth, right? And I can keep trying to chop at everything, or I can narrow my focus and I can get something done. And sometimes again, getting something done is the motivation to keep going versus being so spread out. And so we did that. And, you know, we initially started with the goal of doing work in a certain kind of way, like we just wanted to do college and university work, where we've kind of spread now where we're doing education is a big focus, college and university, but we're also doing K-12. Mm-hmm. So we've built kind of elementary schools, high schools. We've worked at our alma mater and done some cool projects. Now that's a cool thing to
work. You get to come home,
and
do some stuff.
Yeah,
It probably means a lot more.
Oh man, it's
when you see a building that you could help construct or construct it
on
your old stomping grounds and campus. Yeah. That's a lot of pride, and I know how proud your family is.
Yeah, so I say, me and Tori talk about this. Like I know my campus, like I've never known my campus, places I never went on campus. Right. You know how we are. We got, if you in sociology degree, which I was, I went to the buildings of a sociology
and I was going back to the football facility
and the dining hall. Those are the places I know. So now we've learned a whole lot more about campus because we're working on campus, but we've done work for our city. We do parks and recreation. Yeah. We're doing this cool project that I want to kind of elaborate on. It's called North Carolina Freedom Park, and it's the first and only park to commemorate the efforts of African Americans to the state of North Carolina. Mm-hmm. So yeah. All this time, there's no park in Charlotte. There's no park in Winston or all these other metros throughout our state. And it's on the doorstep of the governor's, because the governor's mansion is right in Raleigh, North Carolina. That's our capital. And so we're doing this park, and it has all these, on these precast walls, all these engravings of statements, quotes from famous African-Americans that made significant contributions to our state. So we're working on that, and we've been working on that for the past year. We ride by it every day because it's just doorsteps from our office. So it's like watching paint dry because stuff don't happen like that on a day. It takes some time. I mean, we've been in this project over a year. But to see that project come together and has this beacon of hope that is this stainless steel structure that's about 40 foot that sits in the middle of the park that serves like a flame. And the flame is to provide hope to folks, African-Americans, that have done so much in our state, and now they get an honor and a privilege of having that.
I'm sure you guys are going to have Charles L. Sifford on there. He's the first African-American PGA golfer. You know I am.
You do know that.
That's right. That's
So to do stuff like that and to be able to take our kids to see tangible things that, dad built that, and, you know, that gas station that you pumping, I got dad and uncle built that. So it's legacy building.
I love it.
Right. So it's a cool thing to do.
I love it. The thing that's we tend to do things, at least from a foundation standpoint or a charitable standpoint. Yeah. You know, my daughter had a heart transplant back in 2008, and I had my whole foundation set aside, and we were doing education, but once she got sick, I decided to change it. We're more education based. So I was just like, my heart's not really into education, but I do want to keep my foundation and help these kids. So we ended up changing the mission statement, and we started doing things in hospitals now. And I want you guys to talk about what you're doing and what your promise was, because I know you guys lost your mom when you guys were kids to cancer. And I want you, can you just talk about kind of what your foundation is doing right now?
So Whole Brothers Foundation is our mission. We support young kids with a parent or guardian that's battling cancer.
Okay.
We lost our mom to lymphoma in 1996. She was 43 years old. So we vowed to do something in honor of her name once I made it to the National Football League. Won the Super Bowl, and then after that, went to this meeting called Bear Essentials, where it was all these families and these kids and these families that were going through cancer. And I had never been to a meeting like that. When our mother was diagnosed and was going through it, the only treatment we got was amongst each other. My brother, my sister, my pops, my uncle, my grandmother, everybody came around to take care of my mom. So. But we didn't have the tools, the resources to know how to deal with that type of trauma.
Yeah.
Because once cancer penetrates the home, that's trauma.
Yeah.
It may not be a trauma from a helmet hit, a head hit, but it's a disease and it's trauma to the crib. So a lot of those resources, a lot of the time for mom or dad goes towards trying to beat cancer or mom or dad resting. Not a lot of time for kids. Well, kids need to develop. Kids need to be social. Kids need to be kids. So I went to this meeting and I was like, it was unbelievable the type of information that the parents were getting, also the type of information that the kids were getting on how to deal with and cope with cancer. Mm-hmm.
And you went to this meeting because, like y'all know, when y'all play, our community folks would try to connect you to the community for things that resonated with you.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And they know that Tori's mom had passed away from cancer. And they was like, hey, you probably should go to this meeting. You probably kind of relate to this. And when he went to the meeting, that's when he kind of...
So Marcy Moran, who was our player development and handled all of the stuff that we did out in the community, went to this, she suggested that I go to this meeting. So we went and I was like, you know, we don't have a program like this in North Carolina. Like the kids could benefit from something like this in North Carolina. I know in my 20s. Yeah, and I'm benefiting from it now at 20 some plus years old. I can only imagine what it'd be like if I was a kid and coming on up through the ranks. So we started a foundation in 2000, bought the program to North Carolina. It's called Kids Can. kids can still accomplish and achieve anything that they want, mm-hmm. though their parent or guardian is battling cancer. And we work with area hospitals in North Carolina. We have programs that provide peer empathy, education, mental support to those families.
Yeah.
And those families at the hospitals meet on a monthly basis. Terrence and I often attend those meetings. Again, these are, it's our foundation. It's the families that we're supporting.
Right.
We feel like that it's important not only to have your foundation, but be visible.
Yes. You
know, present.
Be present.
Your time.
You know, your time.
Yeah.
Like the resources is cool, and we can generate a lot of resources, and we can bring a lot of resources to the foundation. But you can bring more than that by being
present,
by being visible,
yeah.
spending the time building relationships with those families. So we're able to do that with those kids, CAN families. So we right now we have four programs
yep.
in North Carolina, and yep. then one in St. Louis. We're just helping kids, man. Give them the confidence, give them the information that they need to be able to go on.
Yeah.
And one of the other things about the foundation that we're really excited about too is we have a scholarship program now. So the kids that go through the Kids Camp program are ages 6 through 17. Mm. So a lot of those kids, once they finish high school, have aspirations to go off to university.
Right.
Well, again, the resources are dried up. They may be able to get some pension plan, you know, they may be able to get some type of college education or some type of scholarship or something. So we said, you know what? It'd be cool if we take some of those dollars, start a scholarship program, and for kids that need a little extra push, we can provide a scholarship for them and they can go off to university. So our foundation also provides scholarship dollars for those kids that go through the program. And I think we've now given over maybe 100+ thousand dollars in scholarship funds to those kids
awesome.
In our
that's
programs.
Dope.
So that's the gist of what Hope Brothers Foundation is all about. Again, it's cancer-centric, certainly, but it's something near and dear to Terrence's heart.
Yeah.
Because our mom passed away. So it gives us great joy, and it makes it, you know, it makes it easier to go mm-hmm. and to go out and to fundraise and to keep this thing going and to have the type of impact that we have.
Yeah. So you got Holt Brother Foundation, Holt Brother Inc., Holt Brother Plumbing, Holt Brother Realty, you know what I'm saying? You got Holt Brother Media Mogul.
Right, you know
what I'm saying? Y'all got all the Holt Brother this and everything.
But I will say this too, Peanut, and I'll say to our listeners, with your foundations, we've also found that having a foundation has also brought us business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Vice versa.
I agree.
Vice versa. Yeah. So there's as you continue to get into your business and continue to get into your career, you'll learn how the two can intersect and how the two can help and play off each other.
And we've done some things strategically where the foundation started out in 2000 as mm-hmm. Torrey Holt Foundation,
mm-hmm.
and then it went to Holt Foundation, and then as part of a kind of global branding initiative, we changed it to the Holt Brothers Foundation.
Right.
Again, just to make the connection and it resonate and part of the bringing the business stuff on were decisions that we made because we were very confident that the two could work off each other.
Right.
But we never did a foundation because, I mean, it's proof and it's evident because the foundation started in 2000. But we didn't do a foundation to get business.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right. It just kind of happened that way.
It kind of happened. Yeah, we had a foundation. Exactly. And then we started a business.
Right.
But we see that.
And I'll say this real quick, too, before I cut you off. I'm sorry. You know, people often say to us how unique we are as a firm is because we do provide that foundation arm.
Right.
So we're a for-profit, but we also have a nonprofit mm-hmm. arm as well. So we're obviously a nonprofit where we're going out and we're soliciting business and we're doing a service, but we're also doing a service with our foundation by building our community where we live, eat, and play.
Right.
And so it's connected.
Yeah.
It is connected.
And I was going to say, that's another thing about players that we oftentimes, as you talked about, Peanut, we start foundations before we finish our careers.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, we're helping, we're involved in the community.
Yeah.
And it's a thing that makes us unique.
Correct.
And I talked about us not needing to change, but you can take that uniqueness, right? And you start a nonprofit, again, not just to do it, but for something that you feel that you can be just as good as you were in your sport, in your crab, you can be good in creating this service. But what'll happen is because, again, you're so, you support your community and you've been supporting your community, when there's a choice between, you know, Holt Brothers Plumbing mm-hmm. versus Tillman and Harper, Harper Plumbing,
right.
They might choose us because we've been in this community for a while.
You.
Because yeah. they right. know these dollars gonna circulate.
You don't,
back
you don't
here.
Want him. He gonna shit on you. Anyway.
Hey, look, I would just say this: a person I love and respect a lot is a pastor of mine. His name is Pastor Duren Gray.
Okay.
He said something so great, and you guys have really hit it home today. Is that once you're affected by something, you become an advocate for it.
Oh, for yeah. Sure.
And so you guys are talking about this with the lymphoma, with yeah. losing your mom, mm-hmm. and Peanut with your daughter, mm-hmm. and everything like that. What is something that your mom has taught you, Terrence? Wow. I'll start with you. That you still geez. Use, and that you still have hold with great value, and that you used in your everyday life.
Oh, my work ethic.
Yeah,
it
yeah.
comes from my mom.
Yeah.
I mean, not that my dad, because my dad certainly wasn't a slouch, and he is a Marine, and was provided the, I say, careful not to say awarded, because you don't get awarded the Purple Heart.
Right.
You definitely earned it.
Yeah, earned the Purple Heart.
You might lose some flesh off that Purple Heart.
Served in Vietnam, but our backbone to our house was our mom. And I, to this day, cannot remember a day that my mom missed work. She worked in Glenraven Mills, and she got up 5:30 in the morning, had to be work at 7 to 3, and she did it day in, day out. And so it's her work ethic. It's little did I know, in 1986, we talked about kind of my mom being diagnosed with lymphoma. She was diagnosed then, in 1986. Mm. with lymphoma. I was 6 years old. He was 10. My sister was 14. Well, my mom was so strong that me as a 6-year-old, Tori knew and my sister knew, but I didn't know. So cancer went into remission in 86 and came back in 95. But my mom was going through chemo, all of that in 86, 87 or so, and getting up, not missing work. And when we knew there was an issue was when my mom could not go to work.
Right.
She came home in 95. She felt something in her stomach. Something was going on. Called off work. And 2 weeks later, she knew something was going on. She went to go to the doctor and finally got the news that she regretted, which was that cancer had come back.
Right.
But it was her work ethic that, Rome, I can tell you, Peanut, I can tell you, no matter the defensive drills, wave, mm-hmm, you know, backpedaling down the line, you know, from one sideline to the other sideline, how that would burn my quads and your quads and all those kinds of mm-hmm. things. Man, I think about my mom and her work ethic. I'm out here getting paid yeah. to do this in the National Football League. Are
especially
you kidding
what we
me?
Make, yeah.
Right. You know
right?
What I'm saying?
So for me, right. it's that memory it. Of her and her work ethic and her persevering with something that, unlike mostly what we deal with, was life and death.
Mm.
And the fact that here I am at 33 years old, and I'm facing a situation with life and death, and I had these kids that are looking up to me and need me, but yet and still getting up, working day in and day out,
yeah.
is something that I pull from, I draw from, when there's times that get rough. Because if you second act, first act, you're gonna have adversity.
Yes.
And so what are you drawing from? What's your source of inspiration? She has been and is my source of inspiration.
Yeah, I think for me, I mean, all of what Terrence said, but more importantly, her example, man, like, you know, loved her family, listened to all her brothers and sisters, loved her kids, mm-hmm. you know, with as Terrence mentioned, with work, chemo, come home, come pick us up from school, from basketball practice, drive us home, be at the games on Tuesday, be at the games on Friday. Like, we know she's dead tired, but her example of just
yeah.
being there, I think to me is what's everlasting when I think about my mom. It's her being there and just her
smile loop. Too.
Yeah, her smile and her love. She's always say too, you know, people folks that have something to say about you, whether you're doing good or bad, so you might as well keep going.
That's great. I like that.
You know, and do it with grace, and do it with a smile, as Terrence mentioned. So, yeah.
Well, look, man, I appreciate it.
Come
Holt
on
brothers.
Thank y'all, man.
Hopefully,
thank y'all,
by the
man.
End of the appreciate day, we'll have y'all. Another Holt industries or something,
electronics.
Don't do something else, man.
What it won't be, because y'all do so well with Saconacks and the way y'all's transition, what it won't be is a podcast. Because right. Y'all killing it. So kudos to y'all, man.
Appreciate y'all, man. Appreciate y'all, man.
Thank you guys for coming here, man.
Absolutely.
Terrence, love you guys.
Salute. Tori, yes, sir. Salute.
Good luck.
Yikes.
Can't wait to knock that door down, Chill. Man. And probably the only person that's going to be happier than you will be your brother.
Yes,
right?
I know, right?
He's been there since day one. He's telling
the Maybe I have him come out and pull the, you know how they pull the cloth off off the bus?
He's going to
be
him.
Be him. Yeah.
Man,
yeah,
congratulations, man. Thank you, guys.
Thank y'all.
Appreciate Peace. It.
Much love.
Thank you guys for listening. You know, with every show we do and every guest we have, we try to make it very authentic and just be vulnerable and open and secure and make this a safe place for these guys to talk. And you guys have been awesome for supporting us. We can't thank you enough.
We are here to educate and entertain. So make sure, like always, and I always ask you, make sure you hit the subscribe button, give us a 5-star rating, tell a friend to tell a friend to do what, Peanut?
Tell a friend.
Make sure anywhere you get your Apple, your podcast, whether it's Apple or iHeart, link in.
Appreciate y'all. Give us a listen. Hit that button. Click it.
I think he needs to stop now.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Hey, everyone. This is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. I've been needing a quick getaway with my family, and the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the perfect vehicle to take us there. It has standard third row seating, so I'm able to pack my entire family, plus pets in the car, while also having enough room for our camping essentials. Available H-Track all-wheel drive will get us through any dirt trails, and available dual wireless charging pads will ensure we never have to worry about getting stuck with a dead phone in the middle of nowhere. Visit HyundaiUSA.com. or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Awards Watch says Liam Neeson is at his best. Don't miss In the Land of Saints and Sinners. Having left his dark past behind, retired hitman Finbar Murphy, played by Neeson, leads a quiet life in a remote coastal Irish town. But when a menacing crew of terrorists arrive, Finbar is drawn into a vicious game of cat and mouse, forcing him to choose between exposing his secret identity or defending his friends and neighbors. In the Land of Saints and Sinners, from Samuel Goldwyn Films and Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. Watch it now on digital. Rated R.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.